Now it's our turn to, sorry for the words, but put our balls on the table.
Remember, kids, this is not how you play hockey. It's just ugly.
I like it.
Here you guys. I'm doing this.
You know what? I love ice cream, too.
Go back to Canada, Guy Lafleur.
Game on!
Yeah, game on!
Hello and welcome into another edition of The Hockey Show, Colorado's biggest and best live hockey show here on Mile High Sports Radio. I will be your host, your pilot, your captain today, Ryan Boulding. It's not usually me, but my co-host, JJ Jerez, is at another wedding. The man goes to more weddings than Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, I swear to you. Everybody he knows is getting married. We've got Danny Bailey behind the glass, and we are joined today by my co-host, for the day, Nick Costanica. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and maybe your co-host is at the wedding where I'm at here at Panorama Point in somewhere in the Rockies here. That's pretty awesome.
So you're crashing the wedding and have a great view.
Yeah, so being from the Detroit area and being in Colorado, like I was like, I got to go see some mountains. The Avalanche are off, so I took a drive into mountains, checking it out, and I appreciate you having me from my car here in the parking lot.
Well, thanks for joining me while you're up there. I knew when I asked if you would do it, the timing was bad that you'd be wanting to get out of the city, so I'm glad you're making time for me. Nick, we usually start this show with a little bit of betting talk. I don't know if you're a betting man at all. Do you partake in the betting at all?
Absolutely not. As an NHL employee, I cannot bet. Not supposed to bet on sports, certainly cannot bet on hockey, so I steer clear of that. But I'm aware that it goes on.
Yes, and you're probably better off. You're better off without just throwing money away. I like to think that mostly what I'm doing is just spending money for the enjoyment of it and not actually trying to win. But what we've got today, we don't have any matinee games. That's usually what we do is the matinee money segment. But we do have the Eastern Conference final tonight. I pretty much only bet on hockey unless there's an opportunity to parlay something else in. I like terrible odds because that's how you win more money. But I really don't know how to pick or guess on what this game is going to be like tonight. I took some ridiculous stuff. I took the Rangers money line with over 5.5 goals at plus 475. Every game has been under that, so I'm hoping for something. But I also took a Vasilevsky shutout at plus 900, and we can get to that in a little bit. And then Kucherov and Pat Maroon to score tonight at plus 1,100, which I mean, who knows? This could go either way. It's kind of hard to pick any of those things. But that's the matinee money segment for me. How do you think I'm going to do, Nick?
Well, it is a good thing I don't bet on hockey. Like, you know, my name is Nick Kotznicka, probably should be George Costanza, and you should do the opposite of whatever I say. Like, just look at my picks. But I tend to think that tonight I would take the under, just because I think, you know, the later you get in the series, the tighter it often gets. You've got two really good defensive teams, two elite goaltenders. And you look at the last game, you know, what were the goals? I mean, two were seeing eye goals through traffic, and then the winner went in off a shin pad. I think if you're looking at odds, more than likely that's how tonight's game goes. Like, I think it's going to be tight. The one thing I do like is maybe the Kucherov Maroon thing, because I do think a great player can make a play, and I do think a big guy like Maroon can clean up some garbage in front of the net on a night like tonight.
I feel like Maroon, too, is a guy that tends to get some extra space out of the matchups that are going on. And for some reason, I'm always surprised when he scores, but I feel like it happens so frequently that I shouldn't be surprised when he scores.
I think when he scores, we remember it more.
Yeah.
Because it's Pat Maroon. But, like, look, there's a reason that he's been on championship teams in St. Louis and now in Tampa Bay. You know, John Cooper's known him since junior. You know, he fills a specific role. He fills it well, and he fills it largely, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, totally. Exactly. Before we get into that series, I want to save a little bit of this talk for the next segment. But Nick, I wanted to talk to you just about your time working with NHL.com and in particular this playoff writing experience for you. You're a guy that's kind of you've been through some series, you've parachuted in and out of some series, and I'm just curious what the traveling and the writing experience has been for you throughout the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs.
Well, for 2022, it's still been a little bit odd. Like I expected it to be full go for the first time in 3 years, just because, you know, coming out of COVID. The first round it was, like, my assignment was to cover Colorado-Nashville and then likely follow the winner of that series to the next round. Well, of course, Colorado swept. So the Avalanche were done early. So then I got shifted to Tampa-Toronto. So then I did game 6 in Tampa and game 7 in Toronto, and that was a lot of fun. And that's how it goes sometimes with my job. When you cover the whole league, you never know where you're going to be. You got to shift gears quickly and be ready for anything. Second round, they were going to ship me to the Battle of Alberta, and I was all set to leave for Edmonton, and then my wife tested positive for COVID. So I got grounded. I was fine. She's fine. I was fine. But I wasn't allowed to travel. So now I'm back covering off TV and streaming press conferences online, which is no fun. That's what we've done for the most part the last two playoffs. So then third round, back at it, you know, back in Colorado, and now I'm here again. So I'll be in Colorado until the Stanley Cup final starts, and then I'll cover, you know, up to all 7 games of the final.
And that's, we like to do that. That's why it's called the Hockey Show and not the Avalanche Show or Avalanche Talk or anything with Avalanche in the title, because we like to try and keep it, you know, hockey specific and league wide and hockey wide, not just the NHL. We got college, we've got Colorado High School, we got all sorts of things. But it can be exhausting trying to keep track of even just the NHL, everything going on. Do you find that, you know, it takes a little extra for you to get caught up on a series or something going on in the league when that hasn't been your primary focus?
Well, for sure. I think it's challenging enough to cover one team well. It's really challenging to cover 32 well. To give you my background, I broke in covering the Detroit Red Wings back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So I was around for a good part of that Colorado-Detroit rivalry. You know, I wrote for the Detroit Free Press, covered one team. And then I spent 5 years at Yahoo as the NHL writer. And now this is 6 years at the NHL. It's a big transition going from one team to covering the whole league. You know, even this long, I've been doing this for a long time. You never feel you know enough. You never, you know, you also have, the longer you do it, the realize how little that you do know, right? You feel less of an expert just because you realize how much knowledge is out there that you can't possibly get when you're there day to day. So it does take a lot of homework. It's tough to parachute in, but I do pride myself on being able to parachute in, catch up quickly, find the story, and hopefully tell it well.
I think you guys do a great job at that. Personally, I see you come in, you guys whip out stories. I'm always impressed at how quickly it goes. Sometimes I have the unenviable job of doing game recaps, and I could sit there for a whole period going, what's my lead going to be? And you guys are like, I'm going to write about this, and you do that, and we got this covered. And, you know, it's definitely a talent. Speaking of which, I know we're going to talk about Tampa in a little bit. I keep saying that, but you were there. You went to the Toronto series, right? You've seen this team in action. Just what is so magical about Tampa that you've seen?
Well, you know, I've been around the Lightning a lot over the years. I've only seen 2 games live this year, but I think I covered 2 pretty critical games, right? They're down 3-2 to the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, a high-powered offensive team like the Avalanche. That with a lot of speed and skill, you know, and they go home for game 6 and, you know, they locked it down. And then they go up for game 7 in Toronto, same thing. This is a team, and this will sound familiar to Colorado fans, with a lot of high-end talent, but they also, they've learned how to win over the years. They sacrifice, they block shots, they protect the net, and then if you can get a shot through, you've got to beat Andrei Vasilevsky, who may be the best goaltender in the league, with apologies to Igor Shesterkin. So they are a formidable group. Like, I'm watching those games at the end of that Toronto series, and you had guys blocking shots, going down the tunnel. Steven Stamkos blocks a shot, goes down the tunnel. They're passing each other, coming back to the ice. Like, you know, it's everybody on the roster doing anything they can to win. And the other point I would make is they're deep. You know, game seven in Toronto, you know, you can point out that the Maple Leaf Stars didn't get it done, right? They didn't score. Well, neither did the Lightning Stars. That was a 2-1 game, and the two goals came from Nick Paul, who had never scored a goal in the playoffs before in his career, right? They're getting contributions up and down the lineup at key times, and that's why they are where they are. So, you know, if they do close out the Rangers, which remains to be seen, like, this is a formidable group that's won, you know, suffered a lot of heartache in the playoffs for years, finally broke through, and then once you get that momentum going where you're winning, you know what it takes to win, you know that your sacrifice will pay off, like, you start diving in front of shots, you start buying in and doing whatever it takes, and that's why they are where they are right now.
I couldn't agree more. This team seems like a juggernaut out of the East. Before we move off of your playoff travels, I got to ask, where have you had your best playoff meal? And I'm gonna piggyback onto that. Where's the best postseason music in the league? What from your experience?
like all time or this season?
Let's go with just this season. You could throw out all time too if you need to.
Well, probably both are in Nashville. Like, I love barbecue and I love, like, the hot chicken in Nashville, and then you know, we went to this great bluegrass jam session off the beaten path, off Broadway in Nashville, something like I'd never seen before. I mean, Broadway's awesome, but it's crazy and it's touristy. And so we got off the beaten path and went to, like, an old school place and sat there and had some cold pops and watched some, you know, bluegrass music. And it was a really cool experience. And, you know, like, that's why I'm sitting in my car at Panorama Point right now, because, you know, I am lucky enough to get paid to watch hockey and to travel around, and whenever I have an opportunity, I like to do something, you know, in the local area where I am, right, to feel like I'm there and to just, you know, live this to its fullest experience, right? So I have a family at home, it's hard to be away, and rather than, you know, sit in my hotel room and wish I were with them, just like to try to get out and experience wherever I'm at.
And it's hard not to do it when the weather's nice, although today it's supposed to be excruciatingly hot down here in the city. So you're also escaping that, which is good job on you.
Yes, that was part of the plan today.
We got a couple minutes left here in the line change. Nick, I wanted to get into some NHL award stuff. We've seen a handful of awards come out, and we've got some saved, the big ones, saved for the NHL awards on the 21st of June. I'm just curious your thoughts on some of these. You know, Carey Price winning the Masterton, obviously very deserving guy. He was up against the Dan O'Chara, who has had a long career and worked very hard to be a playmaker at his age. I'm just curious your thoughts on Carey Price and the Masterton.
Yeah, I think either would be a deserving winner. I mean, the Masterton has become sort of comeback player of the year, or, you know, or perseverance, which is, you know, in the description. And, you know, Carey Price fits that description, right? He's dealt with some personal issues. He was not too proud to seek help, which I think is an important example for an athlete to set, not only for the NHL community, but for everybody. You know, he sought help, he got help. He's, you know, trying to persevere through it. And I think that that's really what the award symbolizes.
And it's a weird hockey season when Carey Price isn't playing, you know, especially after the team goes as deep as they did last season, and just the way that he's able to take a team and put it on his back. It's strange to have a season go with no Carey Price. And then for the Selke, Patrice Bergeron wins. I felt like this was his award to lose pretty much for a majority of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bergeron is one of those players that you can always pencil in as a top defensive forward. He's a safe pick. You know, whether he deserved it this year in particular or not is a matter of debate, but he's always a good choice. I think the Selke is a very difficult award to vote for. You know, there's the analytics view where you can crunch certain numbers to see about defensive impacts. There's the eye test, just, you know, who's a tough defensive forward to play against. I think Cirelli from Tampa Bay also would have been an excellent choice But Bergeron is a wise one always.
And I had Lindholm from Calgary on my radar for a while too. I think it kind of drifted away from him there towards the end of the season. But we got Kyle Connor. He wins the Lady Bing. And the one I really wanted to get to was Sutter wins the Jack Adams Award, and he was up against Gerard Gallant and Andrew Burnett. And Gallant's kind of the last man standing here. Is that surprising? I know it's a regular season award, but.
Well, first of all, let's not skip over the Lady Bing. I think the Lady Bing is the most underappreciated award that the NHL gives out. And
sure.
We just showed it there, right? We just go, like, you won the Lady Bing. The Lady Bing is for sportsmanship, gentlemanly conduct, and a high standard of playing ability. Like, if you could be anything, isn't that what you'd want to be, right?
Yes.
Like, you'd want to play at a high level, be a gentleman, have be a sportsman. You know, and a lot of times voters just look at what's the ratio of points to penalty minutes and then fill it in. And, Kyle Connor, I think, had 4 penalty minutes all season and was an elite scorer. He also had something like 66 takeaways. It's hard to take away the puck 66 times and not get called for slashing or hooking or
tripping,
or something, right? Like tripping, right? It's hard to do. So I think it's a great award. Connor, grew up idolizing Pavel Datsyuk, who won it 4 times. So I think it's a great award. Moving on to Coach of the Year, Sutter would have been my pick. If you look at the regular season, I just think, the Flames took on his identity, played to his identity. He really had a lot to do with making that team a contender. But other good choices to me are Andrew Burnett from Florida, taking over for Joel Quenneville and really noticing no drop-off at all, even though he has a loaded roster. I think it's a tremendous job. Gallant, just like in Vegas, just like in Florida, he shows, he's a player's coach. He motivates his guys. They play hard. They compete, which is what he says all the time. But also, good goalies make good coaches, and he certainly had the advantage of having a guy like Igor Shesterkin who could win the Hart and the Vezina. So I always say a good goalie makes a good coach.
Yeah, I've been impressed with the way Gallant has managed to rise some teams up consistently. And I do think Sutter deserved it as well. Calgary, not only were they shutting down and allowing fewer goals, but they were also scoring more goals than before he joined the team, which I think is a sign of what he's doing is working. But this is the Hockey Show. Ryan Bolden here. I'm joined with Nick Kotstanica of NHL.com as my co-host today. We're going to hit the break, and we'll be right back on the Hockey Show.
Right now, it's 16 minutes past the big hour. Is that not right, Mr. Scream? Great, good stuff. I think people are getting really cranked.
We're back on the Hockey Show, Colorado's biggest and best live hockey radio show on Mile High Sports Radio. Ryan Bolden here with Nick Kotstanica of NHL.com. Danny Bailey behind the glass. Danny, I'm a little rattled by that commercial for the Greeley Stampede because it's like it's got some sort of Muzak version of country music, and then they just casually mention that Stone Temple Pilots are playing there, and I'm just confused as what's going on.
I hadn't listened to it that closely, but I didn't produce that one, so I think if it was one that I had made, I would have put something maybe a little more in the Stone Temple Pilots vein underneath the ad.
I
think the country fits more with the idea.
Yeah,
of the Greeley
that's
Stampede.
Why I'm confused, and it's kind of I don't want to bash on Stone Temple Pilots, but like how far they've fallen. They're playing the Greeley Stampede.
It's almost like Post Malone playing like Frontier Days.
Yeah,
which happened I think a couple years ago.
Also weird.
Weird.
Colorado man. So we're back to hockey talk. We didn't finish our NHL awards talk, Nick. So I wanted to get into what are your thoughts on the Jim Gregory GM of the Year award? It's voted on after the second round by the general managers. And obviously, you have to think that Joe Sakic is going to get heavy consideration here.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you look at some of the moves that he's made, both in the offseason last year, adding a guy like a Darren Helm to all the guys that he added at the deadline and the impacts that they've made. You know, and if you look over the longer term too, just about how he's able to reshape the roster, add depth around, you know, the likes of McKinnon and McCarr, you know, I think it's an impressive job. And if you're looking through two rounds, you know, I think Joe Sakic would be a great pick.
Yeah, and who do you see as his competition? Julien Brisebois and X?
Well, Brisebois, yeah, definitely, for managing the cap and keeping that train rolling in Tampa Bay. You know, this might be a controversial take, but even Ken Holland, right? Like, you look at the Oilers, right, winning two rounds, you know, adding Evander Kane, which was controversial at the time. Man, was Kane great for them, just what they needed. You know, changing coaches when the Oilers did made a gigantic impact on their season. So, you know, I look at that. But there's, you know, there's several candidates for that award, but those are some that leap out at me.
Yeah, they seem like front runners. I agree. And then, like I said, we'll get to the rest of the awards on the 21st. I found it kind of striking that the NHL awards are going to be hosted in, quote, City 2, which is either going to be New York or Tampa. New York makes sense as a media hub to me. But Tampa seems kind of strange. And then you wonder, well, why not Colorado then? Since they've been just crushing teams in the West, you know that they're in.
It's purely a schedule thing, and it's purely because our season was delayed about 2.5 weeks because of COVID. You know, the award show, it's been in Las Vegas for a long time. The players love it. It's a great place to have it. It would have been there ordinarily, but because the season's delayed, they can't go to Vegas. And for TV, it fits in that window. So it's not about Colorado, New York, or Tampa. It had to be done this way. This season, and I would expect if we get on a regular schedule, it'll be back in Las Vegas next season.
Which makes total sense, and it's a lot of fun down there. Okay, we're going to change gears. We're going to go into this Rangers and Tampa Bay Lightning series. We've already talked about what this Tampa team is like, but I do want to get into what is this Rangers team like? What have you seen out of the Rangers? I've been very impressed with the way their young stars have risen up. We talked about it on the show, JJ and I, last week. But what are your thoughts? Obviously, great goaltending. How do they stack up against Tampa here?
Well, it starts in goal with Igor Shesterkin. I think he's been outstanding all season and for much of the playoffs. To me, he could win the Hart Trophy. He's definitely going to win the Vezina Trophy in my mind. Now, when you have a goalie who you're talking about winning the Hart Trophy, that probably means you have some weaknesses, you know, in front of him. I didn't think the Rangers were deep enough to make a run like this, but they proved me wrong. But that's not to say that they don't have elite talent. I mean, they have Adam Fox on the blue line, who's like a rival of Cale Makar, right, going back to college. Very skilled, very smart. He's won the Norris already. Then up front, you have, you know, Mika Zibanejad, who's played extremely well in the playoffs, scored some big goals. You've got Chris Kreider, who's had, you know, a heck of a season up, you know, with goal-scoring leaders. You've got Artemi Panarin. I just wasn't sure if they had the depth, but they've got guys like Hedl playing really well, and they've been able to get it done. So I'll be impressed if they can come back from a 3-2 deficit and defeat the two-time Stanley Cup champions. But if they do, look out, because they've done that. They're going to be coming in hot, and they're coming in sharp and playing the Colorado team that's had a layoff.
That's what I like about this series is both teams seem very competitive, and while not necessarily evenly matched, they are going for it here. And I think you mentioned goalies. Igor Shesterkin this year is 5-0 in elimination games, which I think is worth noting that this team is they came back from a 3-1 deficit against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They had to go the distance against Carolina and go win on the road. But they're also facing Vasilevsky, who's 12-9 in elimination games. And, you know, up until recently, hadn't lost consecutive games back-to-back. I think that's impressive. So we've got a bit of a goaltender's battle, and then it comes out to, you know, whoever, I guess, will make the most mistakes, yeah?
Yeah, and those are great points, right? They did come back against Pittsburgh. At the time, Carolina hadn't lost at home, right? And they win that game. So, you know, they've put together a heck of a run, and this would be a heck of a third chapter if they can do it. But you know, Tampa is a different beast, just like Colorado is a different beast for, say, you know, Edmonton.
Right. And Tampa's could be the first team since 1985, the year I was born, to go three straight Stanley Cup finals. The last team to do it was Edmonton when they won their second Stanley Cup during that stretch, which I think is an impressive stat. And then we've got John Cooper, who I think is a phenomenal coach, and Gerard Gallant, who we obviously talked about already, facing off. Is there a clear winner in the coaching edge here in your mind?
I mean, I would have to say Cooper because he's won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
And is maybe Gerard more familiar with his team, yeah.
Yeah, and Gerard has not. I think Cooper, I mean, they're both great motivators. I think Cooper, you know, is a better talker. You know, he seems to be better X's and O's type of guy. But Gerard, right, like I covered him a lot in Vegas. And, you know, he's just doesn't share as much.
Yeah.
Right, he doesn't throw your notebook as much, but he's a pretty smart guy too. So it's a great coaching matchup, right? So, but you know, I'll be interested to see what makes the difference here. I don't know if it's going to be some brilliant X's and O's move as much as just who makes a play and you know, who can execute. You know, when you get down to Game 6 and to Game 7, there's very, very few secrets anymore. It's mostly, you know, it's just who gets it done or who gets a break.
Right. I think, you know, it's hard, as obviously based on my betting, it's hard to predict how this is going to go. Until Game 5, it was a homer series. The home teams had won. Tampa goes into New York, wins a big game. I feel like the Rangers could do it. But kind of like in Game 7 against Toronto, Tampa knows how to close this out. Tampa knows what to do. So I'm on the fence about a prediction here. I'm going to lean toward, I think the Rangers surprise it. And take it one more. You have a prediction, Nick.
I really don't want to make one.
Yeah, I don't blame
like
you.
Like I said, I'm Costanza, right? Do the opposite. But I'll just do the opposite of you, and I'll pick the Lightning. Just going home, smelling the final, knowing how to get it done. If I had to put odds on it, I'm going to go with the two-time champs.
Yep, it felt like a similar situation to the Avs against Edmonton. And we'll get into the Avs after the break. This is Ryan Bolding with Nick Kotsanika, Danny Bailey behind the glass on The Hockey Show, Mile High Sports. Just letting this one breathe a little bit. If you've watched this season of Stranger Things, sorry for the trigger here. This is a classic. Welcome back to The Hockey Show. Mile High Sports, Ryan Bolding here with Nick Kotsanika, Danny Bailey behind the glass, producer extraordinaire, head coach, excellent DJ. I was thinking during the break, I've got the stream up. We are on the radio, but we've got a video feed. We're on Twitch. And I have realized that at some point in my life, I've become a hand talker, and I don't know when that happened. And it's extra weird on the radio. Nick, are you a hand talker? Have you noticed this? Is this something that like evolves? I used to observe it in people a lot and be like, wow, this person can't not talk without their hands. And I've become that person.
Yeah, I'm half Greek, so I think I got that going on. So I don't know if it's genetic or what, but it seems to be.
I don't know if it gets more exaggerated. I've noticed on the show, I think because I'm in here alone and I've got cameras on me, that I am gesturing, not wildly, but I am gesturing at things. But anyway, we mentioned Tampa. You mentioned your history covering the league. I'm curious, Nick, your thoughts on how this Colorado Avalanche team and what they've accomplished here in the postseason this year, how they stack up against some of the great teams that you've seen and covered.
Well, let's wait around.
Yeah, right.
You know, if they lose the next round, you're not probably going to be asking me that question. I think they have the potential to, and I also think that, you know, they've got a window here to continue to be good. You know, it's funny. I talked to Gabe Landeskog yesterday for a story that's going to be on NHL.com tonight or tomorrow, just about his journey, right? And you look at how hard it is to win. You know, he comes in the league. They have that weird 39-point season, but they get Nathan MacKinnon because of it. They make the playoffs. You know, that first year under Patrick Roy, they're the number one seed, you know, in the Central. Varlamov's really good. Like, they're feeling really good, and they lose in seven games in the first round. Then they miss. You know, then they lose in the first round. Then before we even lose in the first round, they have, at the time, the worst season in the salary cap era. Right? Yeah. A total disaster.
I was there.
And the thing about that season, two things. One, they even lost in the draft lottery. But what did they get? Cale Makar, which was honestly a break. Like, I think if they had a higher pick, they're not taking Cale Makar. So they end up with the fourth pick. They get Cale Makar. It was, you know, a blessing in disguise. And the other kind of key thing to me is that was Jared Bednar's first year, correct?
Yes.
And they didn't fire him. It was a horrible season. They didn't fire him. They didn't give up. You know, they stuck with it, right? And now you got this core of Landeskog and MacKinnon, and Makar is coming. You know, and it's been a steady march, right? Like, it hasn't always felt that way, but you lose in the first round, 3 years in the second round, and now here they are on the precipice of winning the Stanley Cup. And if you look at the team I kind of look at is Tampa Bay. It wasn't the same linear trajectory, but it's similar in that you had a core, you had a lot of heartache. You know, they made the conference final. They missed under, you know, I'm going back to when Steve Yzerman took over. You know, they made the Stanley Cup final and lost to the Chicago Blackhawks in 15. You know, more heartache. They get, you know, they win the President's Trophy. They get swept in the first round by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Another, you know, opportunity maybe to fire people or to make major changes, but they kept building. They stuck with it. They broke through, and now they're on, you know, have a chance to win three in a row. You know, it's not exactly the same, but there's some similarities there in that it's really, really difficult. But when you have a core of high-end players and you're able to build around them and give them experience and learn and stick with it, this is where you can get to. And so I do see Colorado having the potential to follow in, say, a Tampa's footsteps.
And one thing about Tampa that's impressed me is the core and crop of young guys that have played together and won together in the minors and developed together to move in to supplement this team. You know, whereas the Avs have a lot of it is addition to the roster, but it's the right pieces and the right fit. And you mentioned too, Jared Bednar in his first year. Obviously, Patrick Roy quits in August, surprisingly. So it's, you know, a protracted time for Jared Bednar to come in and start with this team. And I asked him the other day how impressed he is with the core that you mentioned, you know, coming from that 2016-17 just abysmal season to where they are now. And he said he's really impressed, and I have to agree in that what I've seen from this group over this whole period of time is where they are at now is nothing like I've seen before from them.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I look at this core. You know, I've always been a big fan of Gabe Landeskog. He's just my kind of player. You know, he's skilled. He's gritty. He's a good leader. He speaks well. He's really smart. Then you got Nate MacKinnon, who's just, we all know, his otherworldly talent, right? And yep. Like, it's just a matter, and his passion, and it's just a matter of harnessing it. And I think this year, and Jared Bednar has said the same, right? Like, he's been more even keeled. He's had a little less weight on his shoulders because he trusts his team and he trusts he has, the depth underneath him where he just has to win or even tie his matchup if you're going against the McDavid, and the other guys are going to win their matchups and you're going to win. Right. And that's a big difference, right? From feeling like you have to do it all yourself. And when it's not going, you get frustrated and your body language is bad. Like, I think he's really made big strides in that. And then you got Cale Makar, who is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, and I hate to say things like this because you put too much on a guy and you make wild comparisons that are just, you know, exaggerations. He's the modern Bobby Orr. He is. He's Ray Bourque.
Yeah.
Like the way he's Paul Coffey. The way he skates, the way he can skate out of trouble, the way he can go end to end, the way he, He opens his hips and does the 10-2 with his edges to get away from people and create space. The way he thinks the game, the way he shoots, like, he's just an unbelievable talent, and he's just getting better and better. And the crazy thing about it is he's doing it in the playoffs under pressure. You look at his numbers, they are right up there with the best defenseman in the game, and he's truly impressive. But what helps all those guys is the depth. When you've got Nichushkin and Lekkonen and Compher and Cogliano and Kadri and, like, all these guys, Manson and Byram and, you know, Eric Johnson's, I think, played well. Like, all these guys, like, when you've got depth like that, it takes pressure off those guys. It allows them to do their thing, and that's what a team is, right? And I think that's what the Avalanche are.
I couldn't agree more. Kale McCarr is Kale McCarr. He may be the one of the best modern day defensemen we'll see, and it's just the beginning of his career. And then you look at his pairing with Devon Taves. Devon Taves may be, you know, 2 second round picks in a trade with the Islanders for this guy. Maybe one of the biggest steals of Joe Sakic's tenure as GM. And he's had a lot of good moves recently. He hasn't always had the best moves in his legacy as general manager, but this is the one. Between that and I think adding Josh Manson in that, similar to, you know, bringing in Rob Blake from the Kings in 2001 for the Avs, I think that those are two of the biggest moves that Joe Sakic has made, you know, outside of the big Kadri signing.
Yeah, I'm kind of embarrassed I didn't mention Devon Taves. Like, if you think he's been outstanding, and he's been a great partner for McCarr, and he can skate the puck too. But, you know, it's hard to be a GM in this league. It's hard under the cap. Everybody thinks, you know, they can be a GM, you know, but it's not fantasy sports. It's reality sports. It's very difficult. And you look at Joe Sakic's body of work, again, it takes time. And sometimes you got to take a step back to take, you know, 2 steps forward. I go back to the Duchesne trade. Like, wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, but what didn't seem like it was taken forever. And, you know, or was it the O'Reilly trade? I can't remember.
Both of them, really. But yeah, the Duchesne trade was taken forever. It was right before they left for Sweden.
And then he ended up doing well, right? So he had patience. And my memory might be mushy, but you can even go back to that. I mean, and it's worked out. So he's gotten some breaks along the way, but that's what it takes too. But it's hard to argue with Joe Sakic's performance at this point.
It's interesting you brought up, you mentioned the O'Reilly trade and JT Compher, and I was talking the other day about how if anyone had told any of us at the time of the O'Reilly trade with Buffalo that of Mikhail Grigorenko, Nikita Zadorov, JT Compher, and a draft pick, that Compher would be the last man standing on the Avs, I think everybody would have kind of laughed it off, you know, but he's turned into a key piece for this team. And that kind of brings me to this point with everybody that the Avs have, with the depth that they have, we've talked about it, the depth that Tampa has, you know, who matches up better in the East against this Avalanche team? Like, does anybody pose a legitimate threat? Obviously, I think we're both going to lean Tampa here, but do you feel like one team of the two of them remaining matches up well or better than the Avalanche?
Well, I think Tampa scares me more. They both scare me in that they both have high-end talent. They both have outstanding goalies. No matter who the Avalanche play, they're going to play by far the best goalie they've seen. And we all know what a goalie can do in a playoff series.
Right.
Like, you look at, you know, the Avalanche are 12-2, full marks, right? And it's not like they haven't had some adversity. They have 8 comeback wins in there. They've had injuries. They lost their starting goalie. They lost Kadri. Like, now they've lost Cogliano. Like they've had some adversity. But the fact is, they're 12-2. They played Nashville in the first round. Nashville didn't have its number one goalie. Like, the Predators went down to their third string goalie. Like, that's the facts, right? Like, St. Louis, the goaltending wasn't that good. They switched goalies. And the Oilers, it was Mike Smith, right? And I love Mike Smith as a person. I love him as a goalie. He's entertaining, but he made some major mistakes in that series and wasn't great.
Very outmatched.
So now you're going to play Shesterkin or you're going to play Vasilevsky. And either of those guys can beat you pretty much by themselves. So that would scare me if I'm an Avalanche fan. I think in general, what would really scare me most is Tampa Bay, I think, can lock it down better than New York can. Tampa Bay can just, you know, smother you, make you frustrated, you know, collapse in front of the net, and then you got to, you know, block shots, and then you got to beat Vasilevsky. And that, if you look not too recent past, that's been a philosophy to defeat the Avalanche in the past. So I think that's going to be a tough challenge.
And we talked about coaches earlier. I do think Jared Bednar previously in the postseason has been outcoached at times. I think Pete DeBoer really got the better of him in that Vegas series. And I there certainly could be the potential for that from John Cooper as well. But I do think Bednar did a pretty good job of navigating the postseason. You know, Nashville, I think, was overmatched. Like you said, St. Louis was a tough challenge, but they lost their starting goaltender. And then my big fear when I saw Edmonton beat Calgary for Edmonton was just that, you know, the run and gun style, the fact that Leon Draisaitl was hurt, you know, their ability to shut the Avalanche down like they did in the regular season kind of wasn't there. And then Mike Smith is this big question mark in net because he did a little too much, I think, at times. On the other side of things, John Cooper, I think, as a coach, knowing his roster inside and out, knowing what they're capable of, would be the scarier of the two opponents to come out of that side if I'm an Avalanche fan. And then you mentioned goaltending, and the Avalanche goaltending in particular. We're kind of in this interesting spot where I do feel from the body language of Jared Bednar that Darcy Kuemper is probably going to be the goalie coming out to start game one in the Stanley Cup final. But he was a little shaky against the Blues. He's had two injuries this postseason. Francois has come in relief and come in as the starter and won his games, although I'm not so sure that he is also the 100% solid option. How do you see this goalie battle shaking out?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at what he said the other day. I kind of read that as just being cagey.
Yeah.
You know, not going to tip your hand on anything. I would expect that if Kuemper is healthy and, you know, 100%, he's going to play. The only thing I would say is if he's not 100% quite, right, Francois is 6-0, and some of that is him, and some of that's the way they play in front of him. You know, just there's a little bit of human element when you know you got your backup in there that you just lock it down a little bit more.
Right.
Like, to me, the way they played, like, what was it, game two in Denver against the Oilers, you play like that, like, you're going to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, every game.
But, and, you know, now Tampa Bay can play that way too, right? They can smother you, but, like, then that's part coaching, right? Like, the way that they came out, adjusted from that first game, the way they smothered the Oilers, the way they handled the matchups, I thought that was a really well-coached, well-played game. And that's the formula you're going to need in this next round, no matter who you play.
And then the last thing we've got on the Avalanche end before we go into break is this Nazem Kadri and Andrew Cogliano situation. Both guys are hurt. Both guys have had surgery on hands or digits. And, I mean, Kadri was back in the gym a couple days after surgery. Obviously, he's probably not using his hand very much. He's spotted out on the ice, I think, today. Or yesterday, skating in like warm-ups, no stick in hand. But do you think these guys are a legit possibility to return? Do you think, you know, they return in a Leon Draisaitl diminished capacity, or is it a little bit of gamesmanship?
No, it's hockey. Like, I don't put anything past anybody. The stories that I could tell you about guys playing hurt would blow your mind. So nothing would surprise me. But the question is, you know, it's not just can you put a uniform on and get out there, how effective can you be?
Exactly.
And the guys have got to be honest with the coaching staff about what they really can do. You know, hand injuries are tough, especially a guy like, you know, those two guys. Can you take faceoffs, right? Can you block shots? Can you, you know, what can you do with a bad hand? So the opponents also know exactly where your injury is in these cases, right? So they're going to be targeting you. So those are things to watch. I mean, same thing with the Lightning. I mean, look at Braden Point. You know, massive part of their last two championships. Great player. And he's, you know, trying to come back from what appears to be a hip injury. You know, can he play? And if he does, how effective will he be? So it's part of the playoffs. You know, it definitely weakens the Avalanche if those guys are hurt or playing hurt. Same thing with the Lightning to lose a Braden Point. So, but I don't put anything past anybody at this time of year. What guys will play through really is kind of ridiculous sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. I remember in that 2013-14 season we talked about where the Avalanche made the playoffs under Patrick Waugh. Jan Hayda had a pretty great season on defense, hurt his hand, was pretty cagey and coy about dealing with an injury during the series. Once the series was over, he showed me he had a metal pin through his thumb. You could see it through the skin. And during the series, it seemed like he could barely hold the stick. You know, they needed him, and they needed the body out there, but he wasn't able to perform. You see Dreisaitl, I thought, in Game 3 in Edmonton, that Dreisaitl was more of a liability than a benefit to his team, but then he goes out in Game 4, has 4 assists, has a pretty good game playing on, I mean, maybe half a leg, really. So, like you said, it comes down to, are you a detriment or are you a benefit to your team, you know, despite the injury? And I guess only time will tell on those guys. I don't necessarily expect them to both be ready for Game 1, but there is a significant amount of time potentially before the series starts.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, and that's one of the advantages to this break, right? Like, they get more time to heal, and they're going to need every day, every hour, every minute, right? And, you know, if the Rangers win tonight and push that to 7, and the series doesn't start till a week from today, that's 3 more days, right? Which just helps them, you know, raises the odds that they'll come back.
Exactly. That'll do it for power play number 2 here on the Hockey Show. We're going to go to break. Ryan Boulding, Nick Kostanica, Danny Bailey behind the glass. We'll be back for the mixed bag skate, and then we're out of here on this Saturday on Mile High Sports Radio.
Hockey and I fornicate because it's the two most fun things in cold weather.
Welcome back to the Hockey Show here on Mile High Sports Radio. Nick, this is the mixed bag skate where we kind of rapid fire through some a variety of topics, if you will. One thing I didn't have on the list, but I want to add first off is there such a thing as too much rest in the postseason? We saw John Cooper say that his team had a slow start in games 1 and 2 as a result of their prolonged time off. Do you think there's such a thing as too much rest?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, exhibit A right now. I know the Avalanche have played well with extended rest before, but, you know, you certainly can be rusty and you can lose your edge a bit. So they got to work really hard over the next few days to make sure that doesn't happen, or at least they mitigate that possibility.
Cale Makar brought it up that with the COVID breaks that they've had in the last couple of years, it's not as hard as it may have been before. But I like to point out on this show, historically, over prolonged absences or breaks from hockey, the Avalanche have not performed well historically. So the next thing.
Yes. I also think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I hate to do this on the radio, but I think two teams have had 11-day breaks, if it comes to that, and they both lost the next round.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on here. Have you seen any of ESPN's Quest for the Cup?
Yeah. Yeah, and I know a lot of the guys who do the camera work and the sound work. I see them all the time at different rinks. I'm quite jealous of the access that they get.
Same.
You know, and I think they're great little peeks behind the scenes of what's going on. Like, very rarely do we get to go in the room or on the bench or to a player's house. You know, and I know we don't see everything in these shows, but we certainly see more than we normally get to.
So locally, we got Peter Aragon and Paul Ladd, who work for Altitude. They're contributing some footage to this. Obviously, the Avalanche are in the Stanley Cup final, so they're going to be featured heavily. I think I'm 2 episodes behind, but for Avalanche fans, the series starts with a nice interview with Devon Taves. The Avalanche feature prominently. The most shocking thing to me, I don't know if it was for you, but knowing how buttoned up Jared Bednar is in his press conferences, to see him swearing in the locker room for somebody that, you know, appreciates the vernacular of hockey, it was shocking to me.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about, right? Like, we especially now in the COVID era where we're not allowed in the locker room, like, everything is very buttoned up, very polished, no one's showing too much, and so it's great to go see a little bit behind the scenes. And again, we're not seeing everything, but we're seeing a little bit, getting a little taste. And, you know, you look at Jared Bednar, like, he is a smart guy. Like, he speaks so well. Like, the man speaks in big, thick paragraphs, and as a writer, I love that. But you go back, he's a great story. Look at his penalty minutes when he played.
Oh, yeah.
He was a tough dude, right? And as a coach, he's won the Kelly Cup, he's won the Calder Cup, and now he's four wins from the Stanley Cup. So I think he's a great story, and I do. I wish he would let us in there a little bit more and learn more about him as a person.
Thoughts on, we had a trade in June. During the Stanley Cup playoffs, there was an NHL trade between two teams, and one of the players traded was Ben Bishop. And now I thought Ben Bishop retired. I was shocked here, but were you surprised to see this, let's say, salary cap maneuvering?
That's all it is. It's just salary cap maneuvering. They're moving his contract. That's all it is. Nothing more to read into it.
Moving to another goaltender in the news, Ryan Miller's getting his jersey retired in Buffalo. A long, lengthy career for a USA-born goaltender. Should this have been done sooner, you know, or were they kind of waiting until the end to honor a guy like Ryan Miller?
Yeah, it's still pretty quick. I mean, he's just, you know, he hasn't been retired that long. So I think it's a fitting honor, a deserved one. He had a lot of great years in Buffalo. Another really smart, thoughtful guy who I think has a future ahead of him in hockey still. So I'm happy to see him being honored.
And his wife is an actress. I know a lot of people thought he might get moved at the trade deadline there, but I was pretty confident he wouldn't be, simply for the fact that his proximity to Los Angeles and that Hollywood hub, I think, is a benefit to the family overall.
Yeah, you know, again, like, it's part of this, and when you're a veteran, you get, you know, whether you have a no trade or not, and I can't remember whether he did, you have some special dispensation in that sense. But, you know, great career for him, and happy to see his number being retired.
We mentioned Braden Point earlier. John Cooper said he could be available for the game. The Daily Faceoff is saying sources say he's not expected to play. What are your thoughts on Braden Point? Do you think he plays? Do you think they save him for potential Stanley Cup final appearance?
No clue, and I'm not going to BS you. I just don't know this time of year. I wouldn't know anyway. Like,
right.
I'm Nick. I'm not Dr. Nick from The Simpsons. I did not go to Hollywood Upstairs Medical College, so I don't know what to tell you.
Nice.
Just like you, I'll find out when the pucks drop.
Obviously a gamer, an important player for Tampa, so we'll see. Avs fans should have an eye on that one as it progresses. And then the last thing I have here is just, we've got a variety of coaches available in the league, a variety of open head coaching positions. I think Barry Trotz was considered one of the most sought after options of available coaches. And now Bruce Cassidy, leaving Boston, is available. Does he kind of shake up the coaching search and become maybe the top candidate for teams?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I didn't expect him to be available. I'm sure other teams didn't. And I can guess that multiple teams would be interested in talking to him. It's just a matter of where the best fits are for everybody. Like, Barry Trotz is a lead domino. Like, the word was that he wanted to go into management, or at least have a path into management. You know, he's a Manitoba native, so Winnipeg makes sense. Las Vegas, you know, is an interesting destination. I mean, Vegas, you know, he coached Robin Leonard on the island, and Leonard won a Vezina trophy, and they could use a guy like Barry Trotz maybe to get them over the hump. But does he want to go to Vegas? He also has a special needs child who needs a good environment. So there's lots of factors at play. But it's going to be a really interesting coaching carousel here real soon.
I agree. It's always fun to watch this time of year. It's kind of like a free agent day, where you get to see how the entire makeup of the NHL can change with some additions or subtractions here. But that's going to do it for the hockey show. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Ryan Boulding signing off for Nick Kotznicka of NHL.com. Thanks for joining me, Danny Bailey behind the glass. We'll see you next week for the Stanley Cup final.
Closing time. This room won't be open till your brothers or your sisters come. So gather up your jackets, move it to the exits. I hope you have found